places where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
Think global, trash local. Agenda 21, the Rhodes Review and Global Rule for Beginners. From our first issue, which was dated winter 1998, although it actually came out on the very last day of August 1997, by a strange coincidence, the day that Princess Diana died in the car crash. What a day to start a conspiracy magazine. Think global, trash local. The information takes a look at the official channels of environmental activism and consultation in their broader world context. First, a piece passed on to us last year, 1996, shortly after the public inquiry into the planned Hastings bypass. Its harsh appraisal of such channels, in particular the local Agenda 21 process of green participation following the 1992 Earth Summit, deserves wider readership. It was issued as an anonymous leaflet referring to Hastings, but the words pinpoint recurrent problems. Humbug 21. Over the last 20 years, a new faction of society has emerged to challenge the global domination of capitalism. This is the environmental movement. Whenever a new group emerges that is dangerous to the system seeks first not to crush it, but to absorb it, to merge with it and to fuse it into its own organism. In this way, it loses its power and momentum. It is able to be regulated and in time corrupted, until it has lost all of its original meaning, values and direction. Such a beast is Agenda 21. It has been set up to absorb the greatest new threat to the economic growth system, the environmental movement. It is there purely to graft the environmental movement onto its own rootstock and thus to control it. Once again, the darkness will have triumphed over the light. Unbelievably, everyone within the environmental movement is now seen as a subversive by the government, in much the same way that communists, terrorists and big league criminals used to be. Files are kept on all of us. We are now the new enemy of capitalism. Everyone on Agenda 21, not even just the direct activists, are monitored and filed as subversive, alongside their photographed mugshots. If Agenda 21 was working properly, we would have control over question asking, decision making, money provision and money allocation, as well as having a controlling say in the legal, economic and hierarchical structures of the whole A21 process. We do not. The important structural designs, a constitution, the controls and the decisions have all been made over our heads. All the participation talking in the world will not alter the key decisions, which have all been taken secretly by a combined multinational and elite administration syndicate. All the A21 local participants will be left with is the insignificant, trivial and mundane problems that will not alter the status quo one iota. Even when funds are allocated by the administration, they will mysteriously only be provided for projects that gobble up more economic growth, in just the same way as the environmentally conscious World Bank manipulates all environmental projects in the Third World now. Surely the time has come to set up our own grassroots working alternative to Agenda 21. It is already deteriorating into an overloaded bureaucracy. Another sure sign of its imminent failure is its inability to attract any youngsters whatsoever. Here in Hastings, the A21 group has not shown the slightest interest in the one most truly environmentally damaging scheme in the area since Dungeness Nuclear Power Station, the £100 million, totally unnecessary Hastings Bypass. Total local devastation. If the Agenda 21 group are not wholly and unconditionally against it, then we can only assume they are in favour of it. Surely, therefore, we have no choice but to stand against Agenda 21. Such lack of decision shows that Hastings' Agenda 21 has no principles whatsoever. Is it not time for the transport group to splinter off and set up its own independent group and spearhead an alternative environmental movement in Hastings? The Hastings bypass shows how unsustainable the A21 hierarchy really is. Sustainability is about consumption going down, not up. You can go to any Agenda 21 meeting these days and not even hear this fact mentioned once. Sustainability for the rich world essentially means redistribution of wealth and decentralisation. The whole of A21 is geared to a centralised environmental system. That's what they mean by global. You've been conned. Humbug. If Hastings' Agenda 21 meant anything at all, it should be 100% unanimously against the bypass. It doesn't even draw a response. But then, how many people walk, cycle, bus or train to A21 meetings? Yes, you've guessed it. The highest form of sustainable comedy. Hypocrisy. An improved economic growth type economy for Hastings has nothing to do with roads and nothing whatsoever to do with a sustainable economy. Before you can shunt economic goods around, you have to create the bloody things first. That is an economy. Economics is the creation of goods and services, not driving them aimlessly around the country. You could build 100 roads from here to London, yet you would still never create a local permanent economy. Once the construction was over, the unemployment in Hastings would return to its previous level. Building an unnecessary road from A to B will not create a local economy where one does not already exist. It is cloud cuckoo land. Nevertheless, the new bypass will bring one sustainable long-term benefit to Hastings. Jobs for the three men who will have to keep repainting the white lines. Agenda 21, you are being used. Humbug. Anon. Roads Review. The Hastings Bypass is part of three A259 schemes round Bexhill and Hastings. A verbal Battle of Hastings was held from October 1995 to July 1996. A public inquiry with Mr. A.S. Jeets, CB, OBE as inspector. But such inquiries only allow certain evidence to be heard. The inquiry is one into a proposal to be built, not an even-handed judgment. Those proposing a road have a full-time barrister, while objectors are unfunded. The Hastings schemes form part of the Weald and Downland Design, Build, Finance and Operate Roads Package. This means it would be built with private money and paid for in shadow toll taxation. Unsustainable under Agenda 21, but still the projects are planned. The package also includes new roads near Lewes and Polegate in East Sussex. Roads built this way may cost around three times more than conventional costs, with public money going to private operators. DBFOs were a new policy of the Conservatives. Alas, the Labour government, elected May 1, 1997, seems set to continue with them. The Birmingham Northern Relief Road was approved on July 28, but the Salisbury bypass scrapped. Others, including the Weald and Downland DBFO, have been included in the main roads review. Comments are invited from the public to Dr. Gavin Strang, Secretary of State for the Environment, Transport and the Regions. The sinking milk float. Another example of Agenda Bending 21 from Brighton This turn of woe from a local participant sums up the way activists are diffused into dead-end projects. Funded by Brighton Council, the idea was to recycle this redundant vehicle as a travelling display for Local Agenda 21, How to Create a Sustainable Future, gathering ideas from the public. Colourfully painted by local artists, the project was a runner-up in the BT Environment Awards. However, the community group found their council less keen to house the vehicle on a sustainable basis. Dr. Sue Johnson was made redundant from her coordinating role, further dampening the group's clout. The poor milk float spent a harsh winter outdoors, batteries flatter than a steamrolled pancake, display boards dropping off. Storage possibilities like a seafront arch have come to nothing. And we've now received a friendly note. To the driver of vehicle, milk float, XBH6IG, your vehicle is untaxed. You have 1 week to remove it, or arrangements will be made for its collection and disposal. One can see the irony between the rush for new roads for petrol-driven cars and the total demise of one innocent electric milk float meant to promote the very ideas the Earth Summit said would save the world. We are sold this term, sustainable development, as being green. Yet the dictionary says quite different. True, it can have a connotation of justice or validity, but sustain also means keep from failing or undergo, suffer, loss, etc. It could quite literally be read as destructive development, the degree of injury the environment can sustain. But who defines that? Well, the combined multinational and elite administration syndicate we stressed in Humbug 21. Global Rule for Beginners. The listener may not be aware of the various one-world government theories, but the basic scenario is that world politics have been manipulated behind the scenes for decades, even centuries, by various shady groups. Working in collusion, at times even rivalry, they aim to abolish individual nations in favour of a single world administration with a single currency. This is already known as the New World Order. The United Nations and full European integration are part of this process.
New World Order.
The motivation is money and power led.
Order.
Jobs are promised with new developments, which is why so many roads are being proposed. These will shrink the map of Europe. These trans-European networks are sold in glowing terms in Europe on the Move, EC 1994, where it states, "Tomorrow's world is already happening." Most researchers feel it has a malign intent, with the single government and mega corporations literally ruling the planet. Harsh law and order policy could instigate not just identity cards, but physical marking on individuals, microchip implants or barcode tattoo. The Mike Leigh film Naked, 1994, includes an excellent summation. A homeless man lectures a security guard, saying, according to the Book of Revelations, trade will only be possible by those who bear these number 666. Not too fanciful, the lines which split a barcode into two signify 666. Playing God. An aspect of science seldom mentioned in NWO theories is genetic engineering, with lobby groups pushing to abolish controls while anti-groups want the opposite. Genetically modified GMO foods are already appearing in the shops. On July 16, 1997, the EU took the first stage to allow patents on genes, cells and similar products. Corporations, as part of a NWO, could trade in life. Contact Genetics Update, London, for a free subscription to their excellent newsletter. I think that's probably now ended. The Information believes in linking disparate areas to open a debate. Given the possibility of secret alien contact, could advances in genetics and computing since the war both stem from extraterrestrial technology? Or is mankind so hungry for power he mastered both in just 50 years? Either option is awesome. Just say no. But who defined a crime? Since the Cold War, security services such as MI5 and MI6 have expanded their remit to take in the protest movement. Security cameras are everywhere, with improving facilities for face recognition and image enhancement. Controlling activism through Agenda 21 would be to their benefit. The law is also used to stifle critics. McDonald sued for McLibel in 1994-7, and BP threatened to sue Greenpeace over their actions to stop oil drilling in the North Atlantic. Yet BP have developed solar technology, which would cut pollution, not add to it. Ultimately, a totalitarian regime might instigate actual mind control to stop rebellion, or thought crime, as George Orwell wrote. Strange technology exists. There was a tragic case in Kent where a pensioner couple, Anthony and Doreen Verney, suffered illness and death after a mysterious cottage was built near their home with blank tin windows. It was emitting ultra-low frequency sound and microwave energy. Investigations drew a blank. No doubt those working grassroots on Agenda 21 have the best intentions, and some good may, of course, result. But it's no good to destroy the world, then offer an elastoplast and say, everything's okay. Well, there's a whole lot of stuff put together there to take in. It's really a look at the New World Order and conspiracy theories from, in a way, a kind of basic level, a kind of primer level, coming as it does in The Information's remit, the original magazine, where Unknown Forces Strike the Edge of Ecology. It was an attempt to bring the green movement into more paranormal conspiracy areas and to make them more paranormal conspiracy types take a look at the environment. And this is where it meets. So in a way, I was taking particular cases there of dealing with almost kind of local conspiracies to do with road building and government consultations, public inquiries, and kind of have a conspiratorial view of them. And so that's why you could take the road building elements there when I'm talking about road building as being any kind of huge government projects or plans or agendas. I'm going to just take a look now at the magazine, because it's quite interesting how it's put together. There's some artwork. There's a nice graphic of some motorways at the start. But then it cuts to Humbug 21. And this was, as I said, passed on to us. It was typewritten with an old mechanical typewriter and photocopied. And it was quite hard to read out on here because it featured a lot of strange typography. You know, capital letters in the middle of sentences, occasionally handwritten arrows and stuff in the text that when I typeset the magazine, I had to kind of recreate with symbols. But it was quite a tricky thing to fully make sense of, and it wasn't my own writing. I may not agree with all of it. I mean, this guy obviously, I think, believes in Agenda 21 as a good idea, and this is a bit of an elephant in the room here looking at this article. When I was involved with Agenda 21, and I could come out now on here and say I was the Brighton activist guy who painted the milk float with some others, of course, and I still am very proud of having done that. It was a lovely project at the time. And it was a nice, freaky, hippie bit of artwork on there. I mean, I was vaguely aware of conspiracies at the time. I'd been to one David Icke talk when he did talk to a couple of dogs and their owners in the room. Maybe not quite that bad. But when he came down to Brighton in 1994, and I read his book, The Robots Rebellion, from Hove Library. And so I had an idea of this sort of stuff, the bigger agendas. But then my feeling at the time was that if we took the Green Movement and really made it work, then that will be a way of getting against the New World Order, a way of being kind of activists against the New World Order. by kind of throwing their own medicine back in their face, if you see what I mean. If they had created Agenda 21 as a kind of way to deflate activism, as this guy here kind of implies, you steer them into something that's not going to work and then stop them from being really effective, it might seem a good idea to then make that really work, and then you've got a really good tool that's been fashioned for you and you turn it against your oppressors. I like to think, and I don't think it's entirely untrue to say that we did that in Brighton. I mean, we did get a lot of views from the public about how Brighton could be made more green. And the thing is, I mean, there's a lot of local history here about the town which would be beyond what I can really say on a short bit of audio like this. But basically, a few years later, 5 years later at the millennium, Brighton became a millennium city. That's kind of a local controversy conspiracy in itself. And but the idea after that was in the housing boom and the kind of debt bubble that came in the early years of the 21st century, to be later followed by the credit crunch, of course. But in that time, it was about making it a rich place, building giant skyscrapers, most of which never did get built in the end. But at the time, it seemed a kind of science fiction Brave New World they were trying to set up, and it was very much against the sustainable ideas, in a good sense, I hope, that we came up with in our own milk float Agenda 21 process that involved driving this milk float around town, parking it, putting out loads of signs and little games for the public to play, kind of fill in cards and stick things on a wall, problem wall, solution tree. Then we collated all this information and fed it into the process. Council typed it all up and stuck it in a folder somewhere, probably never to be seen again. Unfortunately, the same applied to the milk float, which got put in, eventually ended up at a waste depot, and I took some film of it in 1996 and some photographs, so it was well recorded. And then I think it went to the crusher, and that was the end of it, which was very sad. And I did make a little miniature model of it from another milk float. Only it was a 1960s dinky toy, which I painted up as an exact replica. So I've got a mini replica of it, but the real thing's gone. But, you know, our spirit was right at the time, and we were taking Agenda 21 sincerely. But in testing it, we then found it wanting. Now, of course, you've listened to someone like Alex Jones, who I'm not in any way criticising. In fact, I agree with him. I've even spoken to him once briefly on the phone. But he's based in Texas, and of course he puts out incredible stuff, you know, about the New World Order, and he bases it very much on documentation. And he says that Agenda 21 is a United Nations scam, and it's, if you read the whole document, and I mean I haven't, it's got stuff in there about population control, eugenics, that kind of thing, and that's a sinister side. This is where we start to get to the sinister side of sustainable, because what does that mean? Does it mean less consumption? Does that mean less population? Then does that mean forced population reduction? And if it's talking about getting rid of 90% of the population, that's not a good thing. And it's even worse if you start doing it by spreading disease and stuff like that. I mean, who knows what the population might be one day? Maybe in 1,000 years' time, it might be smaller, because that may be the way things go anyway. We may all emigrate to Mars or something, but you don't suddenly force it in a few years. I mean, eventually, you know, you can't keep digging things out of the ground. And I think there is a danger in some conspiracy circles to not the green movement, but not put anything positive in its place. But that doesn't mean to say the green movement is beyond criticism. It certainly isn't. But as you must remember, all this stuff here is what we knew about on the ground. We weren't having the benefit of huge hindsight documentation and internet-based research. That wasn't around back in 95 through to the late 90s, when this stuff was kind of lived and experienced and come up with. We were kind of living the story, you know, and now you can look back and analyse the story, analyse the narrative a bit more. But I quite like the way this argument here does weave those points in as case studies into a slightly more conspiratorial way of looking at the world. And that kind of blends in nicely to the bit at the end where I reprise that I say here. But who defines that? Well, the combined multinational and elite administration syndicate we stressed in Humbug 21. Well, in fact, I stressed in bold type those words, and I put in the article as published, my stress aid, as they do, because the original author, unknown, hadn't stressed those words. But I felt that was the most important thing he was saying. And that nicely went into the next part of the article, Global Rule for Beginners. And then we talk about the New World Order, and we do lay it on the table quite strongly. I mean, the trans-European networks and stuff like that. There are parallels with what's happened in America subsequently, the NAFTA stuff and the Great Highway from Mexico into Texas and the southern states of the United States, which Alex Jones has spoken about. And David Icke, I think, is included in one of his later books. It's about making North America part of Mexico, making it all one big area, again, cutting state boundaries, making blocks, power blocks, which then become easier to control under a new world order. You might have, let's say, three or four gigantic areas like Eurasia, kind of thing Orwell spoke about. And I think Britain, well, is it Airstrip 1? Is it part of the EU? Or is it the special relationship? I'm not quite sure, to be honest. I think there's some confusion over that. Smoke and mirrors, maybe. Maybe it's meant to confuse. Or maybe there is genuine confusion within the New World Order. I'm not entirely convinced the New World Order always goes as they plan it to. I think it sometimes goes a bit wrong. I think they're trying to do too many things at once. And I think that's why it's got a bit garbled. I think sometimes there's criticism saying, well, how could they plan all this and do it all perfectly? But they're not. They're not. You know, they're cocking it up quite a lot, very often, I think. There's quite a nice graphic included here, appraising my own artwork. various slightly Orwellian clone-looking characters with cameras looking down at them, and they've got barcodes on their forehead. The barcodes, yeah, divides into two because there are three lines, one at each end and one in the middle. So where I put that, the three lines split the barcode into two, that explains that. You probably wouldn't actually have a barcode on you, you'd probably have a chip, but there could be a barcode. I mean, you could actually tattoo a barcode on someone, it would be light readable. That has been done, I think, even with temporary tattoos, to go into a club and stuff like that, or go to a festival. You could temporarily tattoo someone and scan it, but then that could wear off afterwards. That may not matter if you're doing it voluntarily, but it would if they started to actually inject it into you like a permanent tattoo. But more likely a microchip, a very chip, as it's known as now, which is a tiny little thing. It doesn't really look like a proper silicon chip. It's like a kind of grain of rice that they inject. We then moved on to playing God, which was quite interesting, the genetics thing. There was a huge controversy at the time in the late 90s. We had a thing called the five-year freeze that put it off for a while. I think it's still bubbling along in the background. We don't hear much about it now. I mean, the big news has all moved on now. There were huge demonstrations just the other week in December 2010, when I'm recording this, about student tuition fees. And of course, that's all to do with the government deficit. So that's the kind of downside of the credit crunch, which followed the kind of housing boom, which followed after the millennium. And we were writing in a pre-millennium time. So we were kind of looking ahead to this future. So we kind of had it a bit right, but obviously some of the issues have moved on. We were very good, though, on the Just Say No section, I think. Well, McDonald's and Greenpeace seem quite small fry now, I think, in terms of campaigns and controversies. I mean, BP, of course, there was that huge explosion in the Gulf earlier in 2010, and there's lots we could say about that. There's possibly been naval ship manoeuvres around that area, and there is a rumour that some sort of alien life form was discovered on the seabed, and that may be what was really going on. But I'm not quite sure whether they'd blow up a whole oil rig just to cover that up. We haven't heard the whole story of this, but if you look at YouTube, you can see a video, last time I looked, of a kind of amoeba on the surface of the ocean, and it does look convincing, but, you know, not sure what it is. I guess you'd have to go onto Google and Google amoeba at the bottom of the sea or something like that in the Gulf of Mexico. This whole business in the Gulf of Mexico has something in common, really, with the USO phenomenon that relates very closely to UFOs, unidentified flying objects. USOs are unidentified submersible objects, so they're kind of underwater UFOs. And there's a possibility a French submarine actually encountered one of these underwater, and there's some very strange accounts which were published in Nexus magazine and I think it's ongoing on the internet, a kind of blog type account about how this stuff was picked up from a computer that was I think owned by the French government. It was a bit of a long story, but the French submarine encountered some sort of underwater submersible object, and this amoeba may have been something that escaped from that or was on the seafloor previously. We're just not sure. I mean, is it something that lives in the Earth's crust, or is it, you know, some genuine alien? We just don't know. It's a fascinating angle on the Gulf of Mexico incident. And like I said, you know, there were apparently some military manoeuvres going on, ships from several countries involved with that. So although I think at the moment they've quelled the leak, there's all sorts of talk about two giant oil slicks underwater kind of travelling with the world's currents. And we don't know where these are. The stories could have been exaggerated, or equally, if we don't know where they are, we don't know where they are. But like I said, when we wrote this, we were talking about, you know, BP trying to sue activists. In fact, no, BP threatened to sue Greenpeace. Yes, about the North Atlantic, which was a new oil field where there are lots of whales and stuff. And it's really an Arctic wilderness, and we didn't want BP to start drilling in what was known as the North Atlantic frontier, which was, like it suggests, a frontier, a new place to start drilling. And that was stopped, in fact. But again, you know, arguments about climate change here. If we reject the fact that it's man-made and caused by burning fossil fuels, and there's some argument whether these fuels are even fossils, oil could in fact be created in the earth, but that's a whole new ball game. But if they don't cause climate change, it's still not good to use up all the earth's resources, of course, and it's still polluting. But equally, groups like Greenpeace now would probably not be so radical, I think, in the light of the various New World Order theories that have come out since then. They haven't really moved on, a lot of these green groups, into taking on areas that are a bit more truly anti-globalist in the sense of being anti-New World Order. And of course, BP is no longer British Petroleum. It was called for a while Beyond Petroleum, but I also know it's not mainly owned by Britain now. It's got a lot of American interests owning parts of it as well. And of course, they use companies like Halliburton for some of the subcontracting, and that could have been the thing that set off that whole oil explosion, leak, or whatever you want to call it. But of course, this whole business about the ships and the amoeba underwater is another mystery entirely. Yeah, turning to the end of the article, I had a bit about mind control and the case of Anthony Dorian Verney. That was reported in a very good magazine that came out in the 90s called Enigma. It was a very colourful newsstand type magazine, but it wasn't one of these things that trivialises paranormal and conspiracy topics, as I think quite a lot of these magazines tend to do nowadays. I mean, if you look at the Fortune Times, unfortunately, I mean, it started off very well, very much as a small circulation zine. You had to subscribe to it, and it was A5 and black and white inside, and it had all the falling fish type stories, which were great, and anomalous events and stuff like that. But then they started to expand the magazine, go more mainstream. It was taken on by more of a mainstream publisher, and it came out in colour. It went up to sort of tabloid, not tabloid, that American comic size, and then it went up to A4. And so it was quite colourful, but then it got, you know, very, very mainstream, and started to put in stuff a bit about New World Order, but it would be sort of seeing conspiracy theorists as a kind of slightly bonkers phenomenon in their own right, as funny characters that you might cover as eccentrics in life, much the way they might look at a strange animal they may have found, which would be a story they could do well. But when they take on a conspiracy theorist or researcher, as we would say, and start taking the mickey out of them and saying this is someone with wacky beliefs and all these nutters and this sort of thing, that's where the Fortune Times went badly wrong, in my view. And Enigma, although it was colour, it completely avoided that problem. I mean, it was pre 9/11 when it came out, but at the same time, it had a very much New World Order, or being against the New World Order view, but it wasn't afraid to cover stuff like moon landing hoaxes and stuff like that as well. There's often a bit of a gap between those who look at New World Order and those who look at UFO and stuff like that, UFOs and slightly more paranormal areas, but they tended to cover them all. They saw them all as an enigma. And I don't think it relates to the Enigma TV channel that's recently been on, and I think is threatened with closure. I think it was a separate organisation publishing the magazine, but I may not be right about that. Anyway, Anthony, Doreen, Verney, they were covered in that magazine, and we mentioned it. We didn't find out a lot more, but of course, since then, mobile phones and microwaves and Wi-Fi technology have spread a huge amount in society, and there are researchers who look into the ill effects of those masts, and also that they may well be used for mind control purposes and you know, suppressing the immune system and stuff like that. I've got here a very interesting book I bought again after this was published, what we wrote in this magazine, a book called Remote Viewers: The Secret History of America's Psychic Spies by Jim Schnabel. And it's got a really good cover, kind of eyes up in the clouds looking out at a war. It seems to be the first Gulf War, judging by the photograph. Smoke, helicopters and a tank in desert camouflage. And this amazing book, which is a few hundred pages, 386 about, it's got photographs in the middle showing the various remote viewers who worked for FBI, I think, certainly the American military, in a outfit called Operation Grill Flame. Quite hard to say that without getting your tongue tied up. And they would lay in a dark room and basically visualise scenes that were happening, well, across the world, often behind the Iron Curtain, you know, military bases and that sort of thing. And then they would draw these. There was a very good remote viewer called Ingo Swan, who invented a systematic way of remote viewing called coordinate remote viewing. And another guy called Joe Montnomeagle, I haven't got the page in front of me, I'm just saying that from memory. And he was more instinctive. He would sort of do very good drawings, but it was more freeform. And he was one of the few people who could actually read documents sometimes while remote viewing, because apparently if you remote view a room and you see it from afar through this technique, which is a kind of astral projection, you kind of put your mind into another location and see it as if you're there, but really you're just lying in a room on the other side of the world. But if you find, say, a secret document, the trouble is if you start reading it, your left brain kicks in apparently, and so you, it's like trying to read a document in a dream. You can't read the words, they all go swimming and blurry, and then you pull out of the remote viewing and you kind of wake up. But this guy was able to just about keep a little bit of his left brain ticking over, so he could sometimes read documents and lettering within the setting he was remote viewing, which is quite an achievement. And he was able to view the new class of Russian submarine that had been built at the time, the biggest submarine in the world. I think it was a Typhoon, but that may not be right. I can't find a page, actually. Just glancing through this, but some excellent photographs in the middle. And a guy called Ed Dames as well was very good, and he's been on TalkSport. I think he was on the James Whale show when James Whale was still working for them. And yeah, here we are, the submarine. Yeah, the Typhoon class submarine, the largest in the world Soviet sub. It's a great big broad bellied kind of sub. Must be pretty huge inside, kind of thing Captain Nemo would build. Anyway, that is an excellent book that talks about this kind of mind stuff, and but that's using the power of the mind more than technology. But as some researchers say, a lot of these things cross over when you've got secret organisations putting together mind control and mind influencing techniques. You can use things that are more to do with you looking at things from afar through remote viewing, or you can try to influence someone by beaming microwaves at them, and are all techniques that are known to exist. just by that aside, in terms of at the end here, we have no doubt those working grassroots on Agenda 21 have the best intentions. Well, I hope they have, but just to kind of wind this up thematically a little bit, talking about activism, green activism, political activism, like I've already said, the demonstrations about student tuition fees, but of course there were a lot of very radical demonstrations, if that's the right word, certainly lively, about the Iraq war a few years ago, from about 2003 to 2005 up to maybe about 2008. They really kind of followed the George Bush era. I mean, the last one I went on was late 2008, and it was starting to get a bit rough then. It was when George Bush came to Britain for, I think, his second visit. He made a visit in late 2003, and he probably made other visits too, but in terms of ones he made after the Iraq war, he came in late 2003. That was a state visit, and he did come again in mid-2008. That was towards the end of his reign, and he visited Gordon Brown. And there was quite a big demonstration in Parliament Square and Whitehall at the time on a Sunday, which I went up to, and it got a bit rowdy. There had been an earlier demonstration that year too that got a bit rowdy at Millbank, and I can't remember what that was aimed at. I think it was a general anti-war demonstration, the anniversary of the Iraq war. I think it was the fifth anniversary of it starting. That got a bit rough at times, and you could see that things were starting to get rougher on these demonstrations. I mean, I used to carry my audio gear around and record the speeches and stuff. But, you know, on this last one in 2008, it did get pretty rough, and I had to jump out of the way of a stampede, or I would have got my gear completely smashed at one point. And you could see the way it was going. It was no longer a friendly thing to go on, and I began to feel, well, this is not any more the kind of liberalish sort of society where you can go and do a nice demonstration. And I think subsequently over the last 2 years, that's been the case with the I think the G8 summit, when that guy was killed, the newspaper seller, about a year ago. And these recent student ones, luckily no one's died on these, but it could have happened. But what's interesting here is a kind of, I won't call it a conspiracy, but there's been in the news a lot of stuff about WikiLeaks, and censorship on the net obviously is a big issue. And I'm not advocating putting anything dodgy out on the internet at all. But some of the photos I took at the demo I just mentioned in 2008, again, just police and activists and that sort of thing, I put on a website called Flickr, which is a photo sharing website, very well known. And there are groups on Flickr you can join. And some of these photos I had on, and I was asked to join a group called US Politics. I think it was called just US Politics and News or something like that anyway. And I posted them on there about 6 months ago, and they were up there. And then just today, funny enough, on the 13th of December, when I'm recording this, I got an email through. It may have come on the inbox a few days earlier, I don't know, but I saw it today. You have been banned from this group, which is quite strange, because the photos I have on there, I was actually invited to submit to the group. But then the admin of the group, who I won't name on here, but it's no particular secret, he emailed me and said, I'm sorry about that. Someone's taken over the group, or we've got some dodgy admins. I think on these groups you can have group admins who kind of block you from putting stuff on there if they don't like it. But some dodgy admins have kind of taken over the group, and we've got no control over this. And so we set up a new group, invite you to join that. So it's another photojournalism group on Flickr, which I've joined today, and I sent them a message of support. But this other one, I don't know, it's still got the same name, I guess, but they probably just got lots of very mainstream photos on there and things supporting the status quo. And when I did put one photo on there that was an activist in Brighton at the Labour Party conference in late 2009, and he had a kind of sandwich board type thing which had 9/11 inside job on it. I don't know if that upset somebody, possibly, and it could well be there are kind of trolls employed, you know, to go around all these websites and join up. Anyone can start a free account on these things, join all these groups and then become admins on them, and then try and, if they all start at once trying to say that particular things should be taken off and barred or banned from that website. In the case of Flickr, it'd be, I guess, just clicking on a user and saying ban this person or block this person. All these websites have different terminology, but they all work in similar ways. That seems to be what's happened here. I think on things like YouTube, where you don't tend to have groups you can join that are about themes, you tend to just have individual channels and friends, it's a little bit different. I don't think this can happen, but I think on Flickr you can sort of gang up a bit. It works a bit like something like Facebook in a way, where you have certain people who can see everything you've got on there and others maybe can't, and there are different levels you can do it at. But all my stuff was public stuff, and it was all completely legal, and my channel was modified as safe even by Flickr staff. So to be blocked like that, it does show there was some troll out there deciding to sabotage this particular group. And it's quite surprising, really, but that's the way it goes sometimes today. But as we move into really the next decade, 2011, which if you count 2001 as the start of the real noughties decade, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 means this is the last year when this is being recorded. So 2011 is the real first year of the next decade, there being no year zero, as was very confusing at the millennium. We are also moving towards the 10th anniversary of the terror attacks, if that's what they were, on September 11, 2001 in New York. And I wonder whether more of this kind of censorship and semi-sabotage is going to continue. I'm a very low-level target, but my phone's gone off again, having said that, but I think that's just incompetence on the part of the telephone provider around here, which I've been having a long battle with. And I know Alan Watt has a lot of problems, but he's got quite a few more listeners than we have, I think, over in Canada. Anyway, we'll have to keep an eye on it all. But I hope that's been an interesting overview of this very simple view on the New World Order, as put instinctively back in 1997, Global Rule for Beginners.
Where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.